This is a podcast from Minute Media. This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain it, what I'm feeling right now, guys. Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Troy Radio. This is the CarCast. After USC's 37-14 win over the Colorado Buffalo in Boulder, I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Raina Troy studio in Los Angeles, still at home, didn't go to the game, joined along with my co-host, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello! This is the quickest CarCast we've ever recorded, because we sat down to record it while the game was still on, and then SC just bled out the clock on the final drive to ultimately finish the game off and win 37-14.
Yeah, I mean, we were able to sit back and say, hey, you want to just start the CarCast now? And we're like, yeah, the game's over, so sure, let's do it. And USC hasn't given us the opportunity to do that very often, so
yeah.
I'm pleased, I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say.
I mean, can I start off with just like my thesis about this game?
Go ahead, fire
away. Okay, so 37-14 is objectively a comfortable win, correct?
Yeah.
The performance was a little bit good, a little bit bad. Would we agree with that? I think
I won't say bad. I don't think there was anything bad
a
about
little
this
bit,
game.
A little bit was, same old, same old. In
sure,
the sense that the
yes.
the defense gave up the annoying plays that you'd rather they not give up.
Yeah.
But it was not the Oregon State situation at all. It was more just the breakdowns that gave Colorado the opportunity to put 14 up on the board. Seven of those off of turnovers.
Yeah, they scored on a short field and then a drive in which they had a defensive breakdown where they decided not to cover a tight end.
Yeah. As you said in a text message, a walk-on-y looking tight end. Yeah.
So the way I look at it, if you're going to let Colorado score, you let them score on a short field and a play in which you had some wild breakdown
when you didn't,
and only score 14 points.
When they didn't really threaten at any
yes.
other point in the
now,
game.
Now, mind you, you cannot make those mistakes. You cannot give any team a short field. You cannot not cover a tight end.
Okay,
but
so here's
if you're
going
to do it against anyone, this is the team to do it against.
Even great teams, even Alabama will give up the occasional touchdown. Even the Pete Carroll
right.
USC
sure.
teams would give up these kinds of stupid touchdowns. So, like,
right.
again, it's all relative to how do you feel about USC.
Right.
And if you feel very negative about USC, there were examples in this game of exactly why USC is not at their peak right now.
Yes.
I think that the offense settled for field goals when I didn't feel like they should be settling for field goals.
Mm-hmm.
The offense very much relied on the YOLO Drake London offense,
yep.
which I think is not a sustainable game plan for winning titles. But if you look at this game just in the objective space in which we are in, where there is an interim head coach, where USC was coming off an embarrassing home loss to Oregon State, and we came into this talking in the preview about how we wouldn't be surprised if USC blew them out, but also we wouldn't be surprised if USC screwed this one up and just sort of the wheels fell off on this season, right?
Right.
So I was looking for, are the wheels going to fall off this season? And instead what we got was Keaton Slovis throwing 3 touchdown passes, Keontae Ingram running for more than 100 yards, the defense limiting Colorado to 2.9 sack-adjusted yards per carry, and the defense had 5 sacks, the defense got turnovers, Drake London went off with 130 yards, and if the game had been more tight, he could have had a lot more than that. And I come away saying, this is as good as it's going to get, guys. USC fans, this is as good as it's going to get this season. So if you sat through this game fuming, if you sat through this game unable to enjoy Drake London and Keontae Ingram and Keaton Slovis and Drake Jackson and Jacob Lichtenstein and the whole shebang. If you went through this game and weren't able to enjoy any of that, you're about to have a real long season, kids, because this is as good as it's going to get. So the way I view this is this was good. This is exactly what USC should do. They should go on the road to Colorado and do this to this Colorado team. And I'm going to give them credit for making a bad team look bad, because they don't make bad teams look bad often enough. San Jose State is not a great team. They didn't make them look bad.
Right. Well, the thing is, if SC did this all the time, if every time they played an inferior opponent, they won in this exact way, nobody would have a problem with it. I think that, you know, when it's this coupled with, because in this game, you know, there's things you can point to that, you know, were meh or whatever. Like you said, not finishing off drives, red zone struggles, still apparent, all those sort of things. Yes, we talked in the preview, Colorado's defense is considerably better than their offense, but Colorado's defense isn't, you know, impenetrable. So SC should have been able to finish off more drives. But this is what you're supposed to do to a bad team. This is what they did. And you're right. Like, if this is a season that is a YOLO season in the sense of, you know, there's everyone is a lame duck coach. You got to figure most of the roster is a lame duck roster. There's going to be turnover. There's going to be guys leaving. There's going to be transfers. There's going to be all those sort of things that happen with the coaching change, right? And you just got to take what you get. And this is what you kind of wanted to see, because we talked about it after the Clay Helton firing, right? Like, the narrative after the Clay Helton firing for a lot of fans was, oh, I can watch games and enjoy the players again.
Yeah, well this was the game for you then.
Yes, this was that game.
Because Drake London is amazing, and Keyonte Ingram is loads of fun to watch tote the rock.
He looks so fun, yeah.
This is my thing is, I think USC fans need to have like a little bit of a come to Jesus moment here and just let it all run, like let it all breathe. After Clay Helton got fired, if you said, well, I get to enjoy games now, this is the game you're supposed to enjoy. This is the game you're supposed to sit back and go like, yeah, this is a lot. This is fun. I get to appreciate Drake London being a boss. That one-handed catch that he made.
Insane.
That I legitimately thought, my eyeball saw that ball fall incomplete. And
I thought Slovis threw it away.
I swear to God, I thought I saw the ball hit the ground. I swear, until the replay happened. And like, you and I are both sitting there. I'm getting ready to talk about how like, it's very frustrating USC at the goal line, this being their offense. And then they're signaling touchdown. And you and I are just looking at each other like, he caught that? He did, like, how? How on earth did that ever happen? And that's a lot of fun. It's a fun to see Michael Trigg go Randy Moss on a dude. It's fun to see Taj Washington cutting through a defense with the ball in his hands. It's fun to see Keyonte Ingram go off. It's fun to see Drake Jackson find a way to fumble to grab a fumbleception or whatever it is that thing turned out to be, whatever the stat makers had it. Like, these things are really fun, and it was a very comfortable game to watch. I don't think I was stressed for many parts of this game. And I appreciate that. I'm excited about being able to sit down for this CarCast right now and not have that much to, like, there's not much to say about like the grander meaning of this game, because there is no grander meaning to this game. It was just a game of football, and there were some plays that I'm going to remember for a while because Drake London's a damn beast.
He hurdled the dude in this game.
He's amazing. Yeah. Get my goal for the season. I think we can have a conversation about the Pac-12 South and whether or not USC still has a chance, which, side note, they do. But really, my goal for the season is just get Drake London the Biletnikoff. Like, that's all I care about. So I'm not going to sit here going like Keaton Slovis should target people that aren't Drake, that shouldn't just key in on Drake London, and USC can't do this, that, and the other thing. It's like, no, YOLO to Drake London all day long. I don't care. Just get in the Biletnikoff. Nothing else matters, guys. This isn't the offense USC's going to be running next year. So like, doesn't really matter. Get Drake London the ball, get in the Biletnikoff. I can just sort of like sit back and appreciate a good play when it comes around, because next week there might not be this many good plays. And then where will we be? Sitting here miserable again.
So I'm looking at the stats, and I don't want to spoil the Fallout episode, but I'm looking at the stats, and then I pull up the over-under while you're talking, and I'm like going through and making sure that I'm grading the Google form. And I go through, I'm like, oh yeah, we said 13.5 Drake London targets. Well, it was 14, so that's over. We said 13.5 Keontae Ingram carries. It was 14.
Yeah, I know, over. Right?
And then we said 13.5 Colorado points.
It was 14.
That
and
was 14.
Over. We had three different 13.5 over unders, and they were all 14.
Over at 14.
It's incredible.
Amazing.
It's incredible.
How good are we?
We're so good. I mean, I'm very frustrated because I think I'm on the wrong end of two of those. But like, it's just what you know. This is just one of those games. This is kind of dumb and also very forgettable. And that's fine. I'd rather it be forgettable in a way that Colorado is not a good team. And the one area that Colorado is good at, USC made them look not good at. And it was just fine. Like, it was fine. Is it okay for something to just be fine? Does it have to be end of the world or best thing ever all the time? Can it just be that was fine?
I think when you're SD coming off of last week, fine, you absolutely take fine. And like you said, you got an interim head coach who's never been a head coach before, never even been a coordinator before. You get boat raced at home by Oregon State. Yeah, I think being fine should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's an upgrade on last week, which was literally the this is fine gif with the fire all over the place. Like, this is a non-ironic, non-meme, non-anything fine. It's fine. Like, is that okay? Keaton Slovis was fine today. Was he exceptional? Nah, he was okay. He was fine. But like, fine is three touchdowns and no interceptions. Fine is getting the ball to your best player, which is Drake London, who should win the Biletnikoff. And so let's keep throwing the ball to him 14 times a game if that means he's going to win the Biletnikoff. It's not like he doesn't deserve those targets. Yeah. He's going to make those. He makes 9 catches on them.
I think it's interesting that the Drake London stuff, because really, the first half of this game, mostly the first quarter, it was all Drake London. After the end of the first quarter, he had 5 catches for 96 yards. From that point on, 4 catches for, what, 34 yards?
Yeah.
So
Gary Bryant Jr. got a nice touchdown.
Yeah, Gary Bryant Jr. and Michael Trigg had the other touchdowns.
They got Taj Washington involved.
Yep.
And there was this conversation on Twitter that I think I agree with. I would rather see them get Taj Washington involved underneath than to continue to try these long shots to him, which we know he has aerial abilities, but he's also 5'10". And
I'd rather they go the deep shots to Gary Bryan, who's going to run past guys. Mm-hmm.
Or to Michael Trigg.
Who's going to go up and make the play.
And this was one of the nice developments of this game, is I think Michael Trigg is starting to emerge as a target for USC. And I want to see him emerge the same way that Drake London emerged, where he's not the primary target, but if he's your third target, fourth target in a game, he'd be really dangerous. Yeah. Most teams don't know how to deal with a guy like Michael Trigg or a guy like Drake London. You have both on the field at the same time. You're giving them extra trouble. And to Keaton Slovis's credit, to the offense's credit, Gary Bryant Jr.'s touchdown is made by Drake London because Colorado has to blanket him with 3 different guys.
Yeah.
So now you're giving an opportunity to someone else, and you're not forcing it into Drake London. You're finding Gary Bryant, and right.
Which is what Keaton Slovis should have done at the end of the first drive.
Yeah.
Where was it the first and the second drive? The first time they got into the red zone, where it's a third down play, and Keaton goes to Drake London 3 straight plays. The first one was a deep shot. He gets blitzed up the middle and has to get it away. I don't mind it. It's a deep shot going to the end zone. After that, though, the third down play is a pass to Drake London in triple coverage, in which he had other options. He had more time than I think he thought he had.
Oh, I don't like the play design either. The play before that, I think, was this really nice little play action roll out, move the pocket over, or maybe a couple plays before, move the pocket out into the right.
Yep.
That was really fun. And then they line up for the third down, and it's like trips left. They're inviting the defense to get all crowded over there. I don't know if they were trying to set up a pick play, but it certainly didn't materialize.
But I think on those type of things, what you want to see in the red zone is one of two things. You want to see them either force Colorado to take away Drake London and open up other targets, or you get creative with how you're running your routes, you run your crossers, your mesh concepts, and all those kind of things to find ways to get Drake London open so you're not just relying on fade routes. Because we know the fade routes are going to work with Drake London because he'll go up and get it, but be a little more creative. And to Graham Harrell's credit, I think the play calling in the red zone has been considerably better the last few weeks.
Yes.
We talked about it after the Stanford game. There were two plays that worked.
They were totally different as they
drew up, and Keaton Slovis could not mix up with his receivers who had the balls go off their fingertips. Well, we can put 50-50 blame on Slovis and the receivers on both of those. Drake London and Gary Bryant Jr. have the ball go off their fingertips in the end zone. They catch those two passes, the game is completely different, but they had an opportunity because they created space for those receivers to make the play. They did not make the play. The throw wasn't completely perfect, right? And you saw this week, you saw against Washington State, that little the little throw out of the backfield to Gary Bryant Jr. at the goal line was great. The play for the touchdown to Gary Bryant Jr. in this game was fantastic, and it all goes in with Slovis making his reads, using London as the decoy, drawing guys away, and finding the man wide open on a slant in the middle, and that's what you do. That's how you do it. That's how you draw it up. And it works when it works. It's just a matter of getting those plays to work, and they work for SC. You'd like to see more of those sort of work when they have drives that don't end. In touchdowns, because of which there were three field goals in this game for Parker Lewis. 30, 44, and 49. The 49 is career long. He's now he was 6 of 6 coming into the game. He's now 9 of 9 for the season. On pace, I did the math, for about 23.4 field goal attempts in a 13 game season, which would be the most since 2016 when Matt Bormeister had 25.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
we don't want to see that.
It is a lot, but
he's making them.
We talk about Drake London being in the Biletnikoff award race, and I think at this point he might be the leader in the clubhouse, because not only does he have the stats, he has the highlight reel plays, and he like the combo of those things. I think make it really hard to get unseated. The only way that you're going to sort of beat him is if, like, you know, someone like Alabama has a receiver who goes off in big games, which absolutely can happen.
The big games are going to be the problem that Drake London
that he's not
going to
have the advantage of.
Yeah.
No, but if he puts up crazy stats and crazy highlights, I think he can.
Yeah.
He can get away with it with not having the big moments in the big games. But I think there's another player who I think we might have to start talking about in the award discussion. Could
Groza Award winning kicker
Parker Lewis be in the Groza 9 for 9?
Genuinely, I don't know how one ends up being a Groza candidate at the end. I don't know how one ends up winning that.
I don't know enough to say. I think usually what you would end up doing is going through and saying, okay, who has the most kicks, the most made, who's the most reliable with the stats to back it up?
Does he get disqualified for a targeting ejection? That's the funny thing, too,
place kicking.
He's 9 of 9 this season, and he missed an entire game.
And he missed a game. That's the thing, too, because when I was looking up the stats, I was thinking, he's attempted like 3 or 4 a game, it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he did miss a game.
Yeah.
So he has 9 in 4 games.
Yeah.
Not 5.
Yeah, I mean,
so hell, at that pace, he could eclipse Matt Bormeister's 25 for the most in recent memory. But let's talk about more about this game and more big picture stuff after the break. All right, Alicia, we were recording this game while we were watching Notre Dame and Cincinnati. Cincinnati, they were up 17-0 at half.
Every time I look over, they're missing a field goal.
They're missing a field goal. They're leaving points on the board.
Speaking of teams that need Parker Lewis.
Yeah, the second half has been unwell to the Bearcats, and it looks like Notre Dame has just pulled in within a field goal. So 17-14, pending a PAT at the moment. We'll see if Cincinnati can hold on. The Irish have gone to the backup quarterback, so.
Things are changing
over in South Bend, maybe. But let's talk about this game. Big picture. SC gets the win. They do the things that they were supposed to that we talked about. They beat a bad team. Let's talk about the defense. In terms of expectations for this game, I think we agree that they met the expectations, especially coming off of last week.
They held Colorado. Did they give up a season high point total to Colorado? Yes. But 14
points. But it was
14 points.
One point than they had before. So.
You don't want to be the team that gives them their biggest passing play of the season, but also 14 points is 14 points. And like I said in the intro, Colorado is good at one thing. They're good at running the ball. And USC held them to 2.9 sack adjusted yards. Their average rushing yards with the sacks in there is 1.9.
Right.
So USC got the better of them in all the important facets. And
we talked about if the way to stop them is to make Brandon Lewis beat you. He went 10 of 17, 162 yards. It's weird because I think the numbers look semi-decent for Brandon Lewis.
But he did not look threatening.
He did not look remotely threatening.
No.
Threw a really wobbly ball. I was not necessarily impressed with him. But I think the most important thing is, as a rusher, he ran the ball three times on plays that were not deemed a sack. He got sacked five times in this game. Season high for USC, a team that has had three games in which they've gotten zero sacks. They got five in this game. And you look at Brandon Lewis's stats, he ends up with 8 rushes for negative 21 yards. That means only 3 real rushes. 3.
Yeah.
This is a guy that, if he was going to beat SC, he could have done it with his legs too. He did not do that in this game.
I thought USC's defensive front did their job. I'm still not very impressed by USC's linebackers, but I thought that Jacob Lichtenstein looked good.
Doesn't help when Raylan goes off with
a targeting.
Real obvious targeting call.
I mean, it was an obvious targeting call in that they're definitely not going to overturn it. I still think that is not the kind of targeting that I would eject somebody for.
No, it's the targeting I would eject somebody for. You don't hit a quarterback.
I don't like targeting ejections.
The quarterback is sliding. You put your hand down and tag them down.
Yeah.
But
later on, Ray Scott got hit with a penalty for a late hit because the rest of USC's defense is, you know, tippy-toeing around stopping the quarterback as he's taking off running. And Ray Scott actually goes in to try and tackle him, and the dude takes a knee, and then Ray Scott is hitting him, and it's like bang bang. And you know what? I just think if you're a defender, I don't know what you're supposed to do all the time there. It was an obvious targeting by the rule. You're gonna eject Raylan Goforth. I just don't like the rule. I'm fine with flags for targeting. I'm fine with targeting ejections being on the table. I don't know that that's. Personally, I don't know that I would eject somebody for that particular foul that Raylan Goforth committed. But aside from that, I just thought the defensive front looked good. I thought that Drake Jackson, this is the kind of game that USC needs Drake Jackson to have more often, where you know he's on the field, you're conscious of him being on the field the whole time, and he made plays left and right. He was getting pressure, he was getting sacks, he got that fumbleception. He was a difference maker on this defense. And Lichtenstein looked good, and we saw a little bit from Nick Figueroa. We saw a little bit from Corey Foreman. I just thought that there was more life to the front, and that pressure made a difference. But this is exactly the kind of quarterback that you can get that advantage over by just getting him under pressure, making him uncomfortable. And these are things that USC will need to do against teams like Utah next week, and against Notre Dame, and against future opponents where. You have to start getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, I thought it was a huge game for Drake Jackson. You look at the numbers, two sacks, a pass breakup, a quarterback hurry, and a fumble recovery on that fumbleception, which was Tuli Tuipulotu's sack.
Yeah.
So he was all over the place, super, super active. That's the type of day that you put together and get Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week
yes.
honors for. We'll see if he does get that, obviously. We'll see what everyone else does. But that's what you wanted to see out of Drake Jackson. That's what you're expecting in year three, is someone who has basically already said he's declaring for the NFL and put the spotlight on him like that, a player who didn't play much last week in the second half, right? Mm-hmm. And so you wanted to see a big return there. And then the other one is Jacob Lichtenstein, who also has a pair of sacks, a pair of tackles for loss in that, three total tackles, arguably his best game as a Trojan. He's someone who I think I would compare to Jonathan Lockett, as in someone who's always seemingly impressive in practice, and you're always expecting more out of him, but yet there ends up being an injury or something that kind of keeps him off the field. This was the moment where you're like, yeah, he's every bit as good as Nick Figueroa, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what you need to start having those guys, those young guys, proceed. You need to start having them challenging.
He's not even a young guy anymore.
Well, I mean, that's young, well, okay, yeah, not young guy. Not super experienced guys.
Right, yeah.
I don't know necessarily how to phrase it, just because there are some guys out there who are older now, but we haven't seen a lot of them for a million different reasons. And when they get on the field, they need to start making it hard to take them off the field.
Yeah, 100%. Big picture on the offense. They do turn things around. They are able to get in the end zone. 37 points is the season high. It's the most since that UCLA game last year. So maybe that's not a most since blah, 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 because it hasn't been that long. But
USC is not pushing 37 points very often, which has been my biggest complaint about this offense for a long time.
Yeah. Ooh, Cincinnati with a long game down the middle up the seam to the tight end.
Oh, I love it.
In business, 6:21 left. The Bearcats down 17-13. What are you looking for the Bearcats to do? And here you go. The cornerback drops back. Looks, he finds his man. It's not the tight end. It's a receiver on a four-verts. They went four-verts and just found him right over the top. I think it is a tight end over a linebacker. Look at that.
Big wide receiver.
Split out wide.
A Michael Trigg, Drake London-esque. Yeah. Are you a tight end or are you a wide receiver? It doesn't really matter because you're going to catch the ball.
We tweeted when he caught the touchdown. Tight end touchdown, and someone's like, yeah, but he's not really a tight end. Like, that's the glory of that position, because we talked about it for so long. Drake London was a receiver playing as a tight end.
Yes.
And yet here is Michael Trigg, and he's a tight end playing as a receiver.
Well, and when he caught that,
the genius of
when he caught that pass, he's playing on the outside, essentially, in a receiver, in a receiver role. But when you have those guys, you can move them around, and when they're on the inside, they're dangerous. When they're on the outside, they're dangerous, and that's... Yeah. That's an advantage that USC has, but I'd like to see USC taking advantage of those mismatches more often, and I was glad to see them do it in this game. I think this is something that they maybe could have done better against Oregon State, and maybe they could have had a shootout situation there.
Yeah. All right. Next week, USC and Utah. The Trojans have never lost at home to the Utah Utes. Cincinnati just scores, and they're up double digits again. Big score for the Bearcats. Anyways. Side note, USC and Colorado. SC had never ever lost to Colorado. That streak continues for another season. This was USC's 11th win over them in Pac-12 play. They're 11-0 there, and they're like 4-0 beyond that at this point. Anyways, Utah has never won against the Trojans at the Coliseum. I believe they beat UCLA there, like in the 60s or something like that, but. They've never beat SC at the Coliseum, something like that. Either way, yeah, never beat SC at the Coliseum. What do you need to see next week? And did this performance give you the peace of mind for going into that game, or not? Because 2 weeks ago, we would have said that going into Oregon State, you know, after SC boat raced Washington State in the second half.
Under Clay Helton, it got kind of easier to make picks for games. because you could ask yourself, is this a home game? Okay, USC's going to win. And is this the road game? Okay, USC's going to lose. And the opposite has happened now.
I believe SC has 8 straight road wins.
Yeah, and the Coliseum has been a nightmare in these first two games. So,
and like that 8 straight road wins, like that's up for one of the longest streaks in the country.
In the country,
the longest at this point. It's the longest in Pac-12.
So it's just very strange to gauge because the Coliseum is not the fortress that it was. And I'm not sure why that is. Is it just because USC had the misfortune? Was USC going to lose to Stanford and Oregon State even if they were on the road?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. But I'm not certain coming back to the Coliseum and thinking like, okay, does USC have a home problem? Does USC have an issue with either getting hyped up the way they need to?
Maybe it might be a sample size thing. The winning streak was, what was it, 19 home games in a row that Clay Helton had won?
Well, but most of those, it just so happened that the home games tended to be the easier games.
They tended to be the easier games, but also 19 games, like, think about baseball. 19 games in baseball is nothing.
It was an objectively, like, USC tended to win the games at home. That was something that Clay Helton did.
But it's not like those 19 games were, like, the perfect 19 games.
No. I'm not saying they were, but there was something reliable about it. Yeah. These two games that USC lost at home are exactly the games that USC would have won at home during that streak.
And the ones that they would have lost on the road.
So,
and now it's the inverse.
I just think it's just hard to gauge now. Utah is a vulnerable team. They have lost to the better teams that they faced, and they've beat Washington State, which is exactly what USC did. So, I don't know what to gauge out of Utah.
The other thing you talk about, they faced the tough teams on the road before, and the easier teams at home. Well, the inverse is also true because you look at the teams that SC has beaten on the road in this streak. Colorado has the worst offense ever, right? Washington State, who's
bad,
has no pulse.
Yeah.
Last year's UCLA team, probably the best team that they've beaten on the road.
I'm not bringing up streaks because these streaks don't matter because 2020 was out the window, anything like that. Yeah. I'm just saying this season, USC has turned up on the road when you expect them to not turn up on the road. And they haven't turned up at home when you expect them to turn up at home. Which USC are we going to see? Because Utah is a team they should beat at home.
Right. Utah
barely beat Washington State.
Yes, but I think that there are trends from this year that do correlate to last year too. And I think that when you talk about the 8-game road winning streak, I think it's easy to be like, oh, well, this team is just great on the road now. And again,
I wonder if this team is just responding better to this team. This team says it's us against the world. We only got us, whatever, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. Maybe they're just responding better to hostile environments because maybe that's what fires them up. And when they get to the Coliseum, they're not getting fired up because the Coliseum is the Coliseum.
I would agree. But again, look at the teams
My point is none of these things, like, it's flip a coin. None of this matters because we can't make sense of anything that's happened this season. So,
sure.
There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Are Stanford and Oregon State not objectively the best two teams SC has played this year?
Yeah.
And they played them at home.
Yeah.
And they got beaten badly.
At home. Yeah. Yeah, but Utah is objectively the middlingest team that USC is going to face this year.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting what happens.
What are they going to do? Yeah.
We will see what happens next week.
It's a very important game because maybe we'll talk in the main show, but USC still has the door open for the Pac-12 South. One of UCLA and ASU is going to lose tonight. And it is imperative that USC wins their Pac-12 South games now.
I know people don't like to hear that, but the way it is, yes, if SC wins out, they're going to win the Pac-12 South. UCLA or ASU, whoever wins that game tonight, is not going to go perfect to the point where SC would have lost the Pac-12 South by losing last week against Oregon State. So, but again, would you bet on USC doing that? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I would not bet on USC doing that. Because as we've seen, they've been up one week, down the next. up on the road against bad teams and struggling at home against good teams. Is Utah one of those good teams? I don't know. We're going to have to find out.
One of the guys on Twitter has been tweeting, and I'm on board. It's the every other week. So it's just USC's just going to seesaw back and forth every other week. Win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. So if that happens, the next week will be a loss, and then USC will go to Notre Dame and win.
I don't disagree, but again, Washington State and Colorado are bad. They're bad. So,
but it's more fun if USC loses to Utah and beats Notre Dame. Not that it's any of that's fun.
So how does the bye week affect the every other week?
Oh, well, that's a problem.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe you win the bye week, lose the game. Yeah. Yikes. Mm. All right.
All right. That's going to wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening. As always, now's your time. Call it into the rant line, which is the rave line, whatever. 213-373-1872. Again, the phone number, 213-373-1USC, Second Watch Room Show. And that's going to wrap it up. Email address, randomtroy@fanside.com. That's how you can reach us as well. Alicia, final word.
Final word is Stanford's beating Oregon by 10.
That is the most predictable thing I've ever seen. Stanford has this weird penchant for always beating Oregon and UCLA.
So Stanford's...
And SC, apparently.
Kind of maybe okay, sort of.
Stanford's going to lose to someone stupid, but they're going to beat the teams that are probably better than them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
On paper.
Yeah.
Stanford's clearly better than the UCLA. So. All right, see ya.
See ya.